Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Brad Culp. It's September 14th. We don't have Sam Grass in the studio with us, and I think we're going to have to re-record that intro since Kevin is beyond his probationary period as a radio host now.
You're going to let him in.
Yeah, we're going to let him in, yeah.
Hey.
Hey, I thought your mic was off. Well, we got a great show this morning. In Atlanta, we have Lorna Armstrong from Armstrong Emergency Readiness, and she brought a guest with her from the Sandy Springs Fire Department, Chief James Laudermilk, and we're going to get to them in a few minutes. But right now, we're going to go to Dallas with Kevin and his guest, Chris Emmerich from the Dallas Arboretum. Kevin?
Good morning. As you mentioned, I have Chris Emmerich, who is the Vice President of Marketing for the Dallas Arboretum. Chris, good morning, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you guys for coming out and seeing us, and I hope the weather is as beautiful over there in Atlanta as it is here today. We are under 100 degrees in like 100 days. So we're very happy with the weather here. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I noticed out your window we have some rain falling, which is long overdue.
Yes.
Chris, why don't we start off by having you give a little bit of your background, maybe where you're from and how you came to be in your position here at the Arboretum.
Okay, that is a very long history since I'm about 300 years old, but born in Mexico City, raised in South Texas, schooled in Austin, Texas, spent about 15 years in New Orleans, and started my career out in the beer business. I was in beer promotions advertising for about 25 years. And then I thought, you know what? I want a larger demographic than just men 21 to 29. I want what I have now is from womb to tomb. So I want to be able to use my marketing in an area that is going to be beneficial and great to an entire demographic. And it's so happy. It makes me so happy for you guys to come and talk to me today because actually I do have a little bit of experience. When I started out of college, I was on several boards, and one of which was the Council on Aging in New Orleans. And I studied a lot about gerontological items and the way that we need to stay active throughout our lifetime. And it is both our head and our bodies that need to stay active throughout. And so I think that today we can talk a lot about that with what you guys do in the home health care area.
Well, you talked a little bit there about, you know, being active and some of the things. And the Arboretum is a great place to get outdoors and do things outside of the house. What are some senior-friendly things that the Arboretum strives to achieve so seniors can come out and do and see?
Yeah. Actually, number one, it's the beauty of the place. We have 66 acres, incredibly displayed. In fact, in March, Southern Living magazine quoted us as the second best place to see tulips outside of Holland.
Wow.
So during blooms, we have a tulip festival. But during the entire year, we turn over the garden four times a year so that you can come back week after week after week and see something totally different. 66 acres, that means you can walk at leisure, come back every week, once a week, and we do have a lot of members who do that. They come in every day, do their walk, and then leave, and on the way out, they always say, it's amazing how much day-to-day it changes. So, number one, the beauty. Number two, this is a garden. It is not a park. So you're not going to see the basketball and the baseball playing and the pitching and the football and the grilling that goes outside. It is a serene garden. We don't even allow loud music outside of your own earphones. So And on weekends, we do have very nice music like harp music or guitar music in the garden, but it is garden appropriate music. So for a senior person, this is the perfect place to be. You can come, you can walk, you don't have a lot of people throwing a football at you. It is not a park, it is a garden.
Do you do events that are senior specific?
Absolutely. In fact, every Thursday is AT&T Senior Thursday. So not only do our seniors get a break in price, our regular price is $12, but on AT&T Senior Days, it is $8.50. And they also have a 20% discount in our gift store.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, not only do you get a discount coming in, but you can go shop for every kind of item in our gift store, beautiful garden items, even dresses, hats, etc. So it's a great place.
And you talked a little bit before we went on the air about some of the programs you're working on, specifically
Tai Chi. And we do have some ongoing things. We have a great adult education department that does adult classes. I think we're going to have a wine tasting this year. So you learn about wines, you walk in the garden, remember that wines came from grapes. So it ties into the garden. We tried to make everything tie back into a garden setting. So Tai Chi, what a wonderful place. I showed Kevin some pictures. We are on the southeastern corner of White Rock Lake so that our lawn backs up to White Rock Lake. So you can sit and meditate. You can sit and do Tai Chi. We've had yoga in the gardens. Tai Chi, we're thinking about it for seniors. But just to walk around, we also have a marked 1 mile so that people can come and say, I don't even know what a 1 mile is. And so we have a map that shows you, and you can change it around so that you see something different every time you come.
Oh, that's excellent. So you mentioned you were on the Committee for Aging in New Orleans.
Absolutely.
And now you're here at the Arboretum. What are some of the things you learned there that maybe tie into what you're working on here at the Arboretum?
Active. Stay active. Walk. We are totally accessible. We have wheelchairs here. Activity doesn't mean running and stuff. It means just get out, smell the roses. We do have some roses too. But get out and see and, you know, let the child in you be happy regardless of what your age is. We all have an age that we need to keep happy. You know, whether it's drawing, whether it's being on a laptop, whether it's being just walking around and meditating. This is a great way to stay active. There are some folks who come in and they don't necessarily have to stay in a wheelchair, but they'll walk a little, then get ridden a little, then they walk another little. And all our paths are absolutely beautiful. And in every garden, and we have over 15 gardens, you can choose a little rest area to just eat a sandwich, have a drink, and enjoy just the beauty of nature.
What do you find most rewarding about what you do here?
Probably I do a lot of walking around and seeing guests and making sure that I have a good pulse on what they're thinking. And it's amazing that we see people coming in, maybe a little droop in the face. When they come out, they're always smiling. You know, and I think the re-energizing, the reconnecting with one another, we find people that are walking and then all of a sudden they start holding hands. That to me is a reconnection. You guys know, especially you, Lorna, with the emergency service, know that our skin is one of the largest organs in our body, and yet we don't hold and hug enough. And I find that people reconnect here with little ones, with their own age group. I find people hugging, you know, and that's a really good feeling to me. It makes me feel like I am doing something for humanity. You know,
fits right in with your womb to tomb.
Exactly. Yeah. My demographic. Yeah.
Right. Do you have any specific events coming up that you'd like to let people know about?
Absolutely. Right now we're in the midst of hurrying up and getting all our pumpkins up. We have the only pumpkin village in the world. We have four houses that are totally made of pumpkins, and we gave Kevin some rack cards, and they're absolutely amazing houses. And because education is part of our mission, we do the houses, and then we tell a story. This year, it's Cinderella's Pumpkin Village, and each of the houses depicts one story from Cinderella. One is going to be a ballroom. One is going to be the step sister's house. One is going to be Cinderella's room, and one is going to be the godmother's little house, the little fairy godmother.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so we're going to have little things inside to tell the story and outside to tell about it. And then this year especially, we have a carriage that is, it was made very similar to the one in England that carries the wedding parties.
Yeah.
And this carriage has horses and stuff. And this will be a photo opportunity for people to come in, sit, take pictures, and send back home. So this festival starts September 17th, and we'll go through November 23rd. So you guys out in Atlanta, come on down and see me. I'll get tickets out for you in the ticket booth. So,
oh, great. And your Thursday night concerts continue for a little while longer?
Right. Yeah, we have Tuesdays and Thursdays concert from April through July. And in the fall, we have Thursday concerts, which will start this Thursday. That's tomorrow. With a Hard Day's Night, and it'll go through October 27th. So those are concert in the evenings, which again brings out all family, friends. We had a group last summer that came out, and no one in the entire group was under 85 years of age. And
wow.
They all had their wine and their little beverages, which we allow. But I thought, oh, my God. And they're all sitting on blankets on the hill. They all made it. It was wonderful. It was great to see that.
Yeah. And I do recommend seeing
Hard Night's Day.
I think it's Hard Night's Day. They're a Beatles tribute band. And they're a perfect one
hard
kind
Night's
of bridge
Day. Yeah.
All of the generations. So,
exactly.
You know, from
exactly.
kids all the way up to grandparents.
Yeah.
Chris, if you had a piece of advice that you could give to seniors or their adult children that would help them, what would you tell them?
My piece of advice would be stay healthy, stay active, keep the child and you happy. So come out and see us.
Okay. And can you give us some contact information?
Absolutely. Please call me. My direct number, cell number is 214-796-2131. That is my cell number. I keep it with me 24 hours a day. Regardless of what your question is, I can get you to the right person. Rather than giving you a lot of other numbers, call me. I'll get you to the right person.
Okay, and how about a website?
Website is dallasarboretum.org, O-R-G at the end.
Okay. Chris, again, I really appreciate taking the time this morning
thank you,
to
guys.
Chat with us. And with that, we'll send it back to the guys and gals in Atlanta.
Well, Kevin and Chris, thank you very much for the show this morning. I do want to know how big the pumpkin houses are.
The pumpkin houses are probably, let me see, my thinking is that they're probably about 12 to 18 feet tall, and they have a footprint of about 20, the largest one is about 24 feet in diameter.
Wow, that's
and
a big
then,
pumpkin.
Yes, well the pumpkin houses is made, yeah, with stacked pumpkins. So, you know, picture a row of pumpkins, say 12 pie pumpkins in a row up and then around. And so it takes about 450 pumpkins per house to fill up, you know, do the outside of it.
Wow. Well, I'm going to be back in Dallas next week. So.
Well, there you go. You have my number. Call me, Brad. Love to see you.
You're brave to put your cell number out on the radio.
Hey, it's a service. It's a service. I want people not to get frustrated with a lot of phone numbers. I want people to get an answer from me and get directed to the right person.
Well, thank you again for being on the show, and I'll maybe look forward to meeting you.
Absolutely. I look forward to it as well.
All right. Thanks again. And We'll bring it back to Atlanta here. This morning we have a repeat guest, Lorna Armstrong with Armstrong Emergency Readiness. Easy for me to say. Good morning, Lorna.
Good morning, Brad. How are you?
You'd think that Sam was here. I mean, with the trouble I just had speaking. He's usually the guy with the trouble speaking. And Lorna, you brought a guest with you, Chief James Laudermilk from Sandy Springs Fire Department.
Good morning. How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for being here. Lorna, I'm going to let you just kind of provide an intro to, you know, what you had in mind today in terms of bringing James along with you, and I'll let you introduce him a little bit, and he can introduce himself. But why don't we start with that?
Great. Well, we came back particularly in September because September is National Emergency Preparedness Month. So we wanted to provide some specific information this month to the listening audience on the importance of having an emergency kit in your home and what should be in that kit. We're also going to focus at the end of the show today on some specific items that are important for seniors and people with disabilities to think about having in their kits. So we're going to start the show off today with Chief James Laudermilk providing some information on, you know, what it's like for emergency responders to respond to different types of emergencies, how that may impact their response times, and the importance of each family or each person having their own emergency preparedness kit.
Great. And before we do that, James, if you could just give us a brief background on yourself, where you're from, where you went to school, how you got to be doing what you're doing today.
Okay. Yeah, I was born in Fulton County, but grew up in Walton County, Georgia. As I was growing up, I had some guys that worked on the fire department, the local Walnut Grove, City of Walnut Grove Fire Department in Walton County. So when I got 17 years old, I had one of the lieutenants come to me and offer me a job with the fire department. Of course, I took that, volunteered for about 2 years, and then Walton County hired me. I worked with Walton County up until 1997, which I got hired by Fulton County Fire, and I've been in Sandy Springs ever since.
So did I understand correctly that you started doing this on a volunteer basis?
Yeah, my first 2 years was volunteer, and then I started with Walton back in the about 93.
And as a volunteer, what were you doing?
Same thing I'm doing now, but I just wasn't getting paid. That's the big difference.
It's interesting. So many people we talk to get their start doing whatever they're doing because of either a personal experience or a volunteer experience. So it's just interesting to hear that story.
Right. In 2006, Sandy Springs took over the fire department and the city of Sandy Springs, and Chief Jack McElfish called me up and hired me, and the rest is history. I took over the CERT program for him, and I've been running it now since 2008, and we're up to about 135 members at this time.
Tell me what that is.
It's a community emergency response teams or training.
Now, what can you explain a little bit about how kind of that evolved when Fulton County took it over? That must have been a different environment, right? When Sandy Springs took it over.
Yeah, Sandy Springs is big on community service. We do a lot for the community. We do birthday parties at the fire stations, and everybody's going to kill me when they hear that. our Chief McElfish has got a heart of gold, uh-huh. And his biggest thing is you take care of your community, and your community to take care of you. So we do a lot for the community. If you'll see us out and about all over the place.
And I guess that attitude kind of stretches into what we're talking about here, about how you help the community with the, you know, help the seniors in the community.
Yeah, we do a lot of things for the seniors. We even offer training for the seniors, like CPR, this CERT program that we do. A lot of people are hesitant about getting in it because they say, you know, I'm an elderly person. But the thing is, if you can protect yourself in any way or shape or fashion, then that just makes our job easier when we get there.
Tell me a little bit more about the CERT program. What's involved? How long does it take? And when somebody completes that, what are they capable of?
We hold it at least once a month. It's we do it in four Saturdays mostly, 8 to 12. And basically what it is, it gives you basic disaster response skills such as fire safety, light search and rescue, team organization, disaster medical, and CPR. And we do this free of charge. It doesn't cost the citizen a dime.
Hmm. And how many people did I hear you say that how many people have been through the program?
Up to date, we got 135.
Okay.
Which is I took over in 2008 with 20 members, and now we're up to 135.
Wow.
So we put a lot of time and effort into it. The biggest thing with the CERT program is getting you prepared when something does happen. Similar to the tornadoes that came through a few months ago, the fire department's going to be overwhelmed. We're going to be running so many calls, and we may not make it to certain subdivisions or businesses for hours. If the roads are down, power lines are down, we can't cross them. So we have to make our way as we're coming through. So if it takes us 2 hours to get there, then if we got people trained, like, for instance, Rubbermaid.
Right.
We did a class for Rubbermaid, and they have a team now that is trained to self-sustain 3-1 Glen Lake until we make it to the scene.
So that's so you kind of partner with corporations as well. It's not just individuals. It's corporations that are in Sandy Springs.
We do subdivisions, corporations. We've done
neighborhoods.
Neighborhoods. Uh-huh. We've done UPS, Rubbermaid, and Ceridian already.
Right. So that's good because that allows the company to say, hey, are there any volunteers here? And then you hit a lot of people in one shot.
Right. A lot of the companies, for instance, this building here has probably a fire warden program.
Uh-huh.
To where if something happens, you have people that can guide people around. The CERT program acts the same way. If something hits, a tornado hits this area, you've got people that are trained to help keep the chaos from getting out of hand, is basically what it's boiled
down. I guess it kind of goes back to your volunteer fireman stuff, right?
It does.
These are volunteers that are helping to the community to help kind of everybody, in because you guys can't be everywhere.
True. That's true. We got volunteers. Sandy Springs Festival is coming up this weekend, and we've got 8 to 10 of our CERT volunteers going to be out in the, about talking to people about the program.
Right.
And you maybe read my mind there, because I was going to ask you how you raise awareness of the program and how do you get new people involved.
So far, it's just been by word of mouth. We got CERT members handing out the cards, my business cards, telling people about the CERT program. I get phone calls and emails daily. It's also on our website, Sandy Springs website, that you can go to and you can read all about it too, similar to the flyer that I've brought in here. And I can give you that website if you want to put that down. It's www.sandyspringsga.gov, and just look for the CERT icon.
Mm-hmm. And then so any group or interested individual can go through that and contact you or your department, and then they can get involved with that.
Any group 18 to is old.
So they have to be over 18.
Well, what we're doing now is we're actually developing a program called Teen CERT.
Uh-huh.
It's not ready yet. We're still in those stages of it because we got to be careful on what we let teenagers do.
Sure.
So we're trying to create the awareness part of it so that we can go into the schools and start teaching high schools.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
some jurisdictions have actually made it an elective, and then we come in and do the teaching. They actually get a grade for it. We have to grade them and everything. So it's pretty cool.
That is. So tell me how you and Lorna got to know each other.
I just actually met her for the first time today. She she contacted Chief Scarborough, and Chief Scarborough was going to be out of town. And he called me up and says, make contact with Miss Armstrong. We want to help her out with this program that she's fixing to do. And I said, well, I'll be more than happy to.
Well, maybe I'll toss it back to you.
My connection with the Sandy Springs Fire Department is through Jeff Scarborough. And Jeff is the public information officer for the Sandy Springs Fire Department, and I keep a lot of statistics on what's going on in the community as far as fire activities in apartment buildings, in senior housing communities, and things of that nature. So he is the person that I get that information from on a monthly basis.
Okay.
So that's my connection to the Sandy Springs Fire Department. He's out doing training. Excuse me, he's out doing training today and was unavailable, so.
Okay. So let's kind of segue a little bit into the Emergency Preparedness Month. And, you know, I think you talked about a kit, and you talked a little bit about a kit that would maybe be more specific to seniors or some things that might be in a senior's kit that are not in a normal kit. So, and we'll just keep this interactive. So, you know, you want to kick it off and we'll just go back and forth.
Yeah, jump in. I'm going to talk first of all about, for people who don't have a kit at all, they say, well, where do I begin? So if you have nothing in an emergency kit, the three basic things that I recommend that every kit have is 1 gallon of fresh water per person per day for at least 3 days, so at least 3 gallons of water per person in the household. 3 days worth of non-perishable food and a weather radio so you can know what's going on around you. There are other items that go into a basic kit as well. Those can be found either on my website, which is www.armstronger.com, or you can find it on www.ready.gov. As far as the items to go into a specific kit for a senior or somebody who might have disabilities, things we might not think of. If you have to, let's say that there's a tornado in your house and you're in the basement, you think about everything that you own on the main floors of your house being gone, potentially. You might want to have spare eyeglasses, hearing aids, and hearing aid batteries in your kit. And your kit, again, is going to be down in the basement with you or wherever your safe room is. Spare medications. We talked about this on the last show. When seniors put their medications in their weekly pill boxes, you might want to think about having a weekly pill box that you keep in your emergency kit so that you have a week's worth of medications in there. When you finish the medications in the bottle, you want to use the ones that are in your emergency kit and then refill that so that you're keeping those fresh. Medical supplies. We have a lot of people who are on catheters. If you're going to be trapped at home during an ice storm or, you know, another type of disaster situation, do you have enough medical supplies to hold you through that period of time? Potentially spare cell phone batteries. I keep a spare cell phone battery so that, and I keep it charged, and I keep that in my emergency kit so that I'll have phone access if my main phone lines are down. For people who have wheelchairs, you want to think about spare wheelchair batteries. Copies of your prescriptions and your doctor's contact information. If you have to evacuate your home, you want to have all of that contact information with you. You want to have your prescription information with you because you may have to go outside of your normal routine to get those prescriptions filled. For seniors who are reliant on electricity, what if your power is out for 3 days, a week, 2 weeks? You may want to have a generator if you are life dependent upon electricity for your medical needs. In some of the, go ahead.
What are examples of things that you would, you know, that you would call life dependent that rely on electricity?
I'm trying to think of some examples now. I know that there is some medical equipment that people are on at home that requires,
like oxygen.
Yeah, certainly what's the term for it? The device that kind of creates the oxygen.
Right.
You know, those run on electricity.
And then, like, if you're a diabetic, like, that stuff has to be refrigerated in the medicine?
The insulin.
Well, that's the other thing. There are a lot of medications that require refrigeration. So if you evacuate to a Red Cross shelter, most of the Red Cross shelters don't have refrigeration.
Oh, so you have to have, like, some sort of a cooler or...
So you may want to be prepared for that as well. You mentioned oxygen, Brad. That's another thing that people could potentially run out of in an emergency situation if you can't leave your house or if you don't have access to replace your medical supplies. That would be an important thing to be prepared for as well.
We may have talked about this the last time you were here. In Texas, there's an emergency registry that seniors can sign up for if they don't have loved ones that are in town available to help. Does Georgia have anything like that, or is it done on a local basis? Or?
Sandy Springs has a program called Swift 911. That alerts people of emergencies, and there's also a 911 that you can register for on our website, and it's just the same website that I told you a few minutes ago where the CERT is.
Right.
There's two icons there. One's for 911, and one is called Swift 911. You can register for either one of them. The 911 one is, if you call 911, we have your information. Whatever you enter, it tells us everything. If you're on Home 02, it's got a spot down there that'll say Home 02. If you have a dog in the house, a large dog, it will tell us there's a large dog. Fire alarm codes, gate codes, all that can be entered.
Would you want people entering information on there to regarding any specific medical needs that they have?
Yeah, things like people that have heart conditions, diabetes, those are majors. We need to know those things because if an elderly person calls 911 during a disaster type storm, tornado or something, we need to get there quick. So if we know we have a heart patient that's, say, it's on some kind of home O2 and they have to have that O2, if not, their O2 drops, then we need to make that a priority. We need to know that because our 911 center prioritizes based on the information they get. If the person doesn't give the information,
You're treating everything equally, but if you have this information, they may kind of jump to the top of the line, right?
Right. It's just like going to the hospital. If you go to the hospital and say, I'm having chest pains, you go to the front. If you go to the hospital and say, I feel sick, then you sit out in the lobby until they come get you.
Right.
So what's the difference between 911 and Swift 911?
Swift 911 is a call back. Basically, bad storms come through the area, you'll get a phone call, and it'll either be a recording or a text comes over your phone. The other 911 is basically if you call 911, that information pops up on the dispatcher screen.
Right.
And if you, for some reason, you can't talk or you get disconnected, we have it. It's already there.
So Swift 911 is sending warnings or is
It's a warning. Almost like a tornado warning system, severe storm, flooding, all that will come over.
And then we'll also, like if somebody dangerous is in the area, does that kind of
information? There's one on there, too, and I cannot remember the name of it. It's also on the – there's three of those and then the CERT one.
Works in a similar manner where you input the phone you want to be contacted.
Yep. You put all your information, email addresses, and it'll contact you. If there's a child lost or if there's a dangerous person in the area, you'll get that same phone call.
Right.
Are there any stories that you can share with us? And I don't know if Lorna passed on the original email about, the things that we might ask you. Mm-hmm. But one of the things we like to ask is, if there are particular stories that you can share where you've had an opportunity to really make an impact on somebody's lives. I got to imagine there's loads of them in your business.
There are many in the 20 years that I've been doing this, but one of them that I can mention that I was personally on is we had a lady that went into cardiac arrest, and we got there quick and done our job, and she's now walking around and has come and talked to us, and we give her a T-shirt, and she's recognized us for it.
Wow, that's great. It's got to be gratifying when somebody actually comes back and says thank you.
Yes, because over the years, you lose a lot of people. You do everything you can, and you lose them, and you think, what else could have I done? And then when you get someone that lives and comes back and talks to you, it's like, okay, all the training that I've been doing all these years made a difference.
That's the result, looking you in the eye.
That's the result.
I think most people don't consider that about people in your profession. I think if you sit down and think about it for even a nanosecond, of course, it makes all the sense in the world that you're going to lose people. But that's got to be a tough part of your job, doing the best you can and then realizing at the end of the day you couldn't save somebody.
It is. It really is. You go to school. You train every month. You do training for EMS. You do fire training every month. But a building still burns down. And what do you say to yourself? We did all we could do, but you always wonder if you could have done more.
This is way off topic, but does the fire department have training or counseling services available for situations like that?
For the firemen?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have through our insurance and EAP, plus the state of Georgia has if we need it, we can get it.
Do you see people taking advantage of that?
Not really. Firemen are a different breed. We kind of handle it together in the house most of the time. We get back from a call, we talk it out. If there's a problem, then the captain on duty will usually recognize it. But for the most part, we handle things in-house.
Right. It's like a kind of a family. I know I was in New York, and I was just recently. You'd walk through the streets of New York, and you'd go into the firehouse. They're very open, and it's very community-oriented there as well. And it seems like there's kind of the camaraderie that you don't find in other organizations and businesses that you do in a firehouse.
Yeah, we're like a family. We live together 24 hours. So.
Right. So you see the good, the bad, the ugly of everybody.
Yes,
you know?
That is true.
It's not like you're in the, you know, in a business where you see somebody for a few hours and then they're gone. And, you know, at night they're doing their own thing, but you're seeing them for, what's the shift, 24?
24 hours.
Right.
Every third day we're on duty.
Right.
For just 24 hours, and then you're off.
But
for
straight
then
we're through. Off. Days. Straight
yeah,
through, right?
Straight through 24 straight hours, through. And then yeah. we're off for 48, and then we come back.
Come back.
And, you know.
Do you have a dog?
I do. I got a Yorkie.
Do firehouses have your firehouse?
Oh, no. No. Okay. No, I do not have a dog at the station. We got one of our rookies we use as that. Does the same.
That's funny. Well, so come back to you, Lorna. Are there any events that are that you have planned or anything that for September for the emergency readiness?
For the rest of September, I'm focused on giving presentations to people to help them prepare their kits and get ready and put together emergency plans and communication plans with their families. I'm also passing out a lot of the ready.gov brochures as far and wide as I can get them to get people to respond. It seems like there's a very, a low level of awareness in the state of Atlanta because we don't have a lot of earthquakes. We don't have a lot of, major disasters here. So there seems to be a lower level of awareness. But when a disaster strikes, everybody needs to be ready because there's typically no warning. So,
yeah. I think we talked about this last time you were here about how the awareness probably is at a higher level now than it was a year ago because of the ice storm that we went through, and it surprised a lot of people. I know in our business we had caregivers that couldn't leave their clients. We had caregivers that couldn't get to their clients, and it was a little bit of a wake-up call, I think, for some people. I'm curious about your experience during the ice storm last year. Do you have chains for your trucks?
We do have chains for the engines. The big trucks with the ladders, we do not have chains for. They're too heavy. We're working on getting chains for them, but we got trucks all over the city during the ice storms. It was interesting at times, but we made it happen.
Yeah.
So.
Anything else that you want to talk about before we move to our tips?
No, I think we're good. We just want people to be aware and
go
keep
to those
learning.
Websites and get the information right.
Absolutely.
And of course, I know you have tons of resources for people if they would want to contact you, and we'll get that information in a minute. And a lot of people, probably most people are looking for their information out on the web, but can people just stop by the fire station and talk to you guys?
Oh, yeah, they can stop by any time and take a look at the trucks, take a look at the stations, and, get an idea of the people that's going to be responding to their homes. That we love that.
And that's probably a good idea, so that kind of faces, match faces to homes and things like that.
Well, it's interesting because I know where a number of fire stations are, but I don't know which fire station covers my house. So that's maybe something that would be good to know.
It is good to know.
Well, James, if you were to give our listeners one primary tip, piece of advice, what would it be?
One of the biggest things I could give, and it's kind of hard to make it into one, is be prepared for any disaster. And in my eyes, CPR is a disaster. No matter what the age, learn CPR. They're teaching the new program now. It's called hands-free CPR. If you can do that, then you can save someone's life. And we offer it free. So
That's not a term I've heard before, hands-free CPR.
Yeah, it's basically people. It scares a lot of people when I tell you got to breathe for somebody. And the first thing that goes to their mind is, I'm not putting my mouth on anybody.
Right.
So doctors have done studies that you have enough oxygen in your bloodstream that if you can just keep it circulating long enough for the fire or EMS personnel to get there, then you can save someone's life.
So you just use your hands for the heart?
Basically, you're doing chest compressions until
right.
we can get there.
Mm. Okay.
And we take over.
Very good. Well, that's good advice. One other question on CPR. Something that we track with our caregivers. We make sure that all our caregivers are CPR certified. And what I've noticed is on some of these cards, some of them expire in a year, some of them expire in 2 years, some of them expire in 3 years. Why is that? And, you know, what's your recommendation?
Our fire department personnel goes through CPR training once a year, every year, just to keep them from being rusty. That's the thing is, if you don't do it and touch, it's like anything else. If you don't train, then you start forgetting. CPR is important enough. You don't want to forget. That's something that you need to be able to do with your eyes closed
when
something happens, because you may be at a restaurant tomorrow and somebody falls out, has a heart attack, chokes. Right. If you don't know what you're doing, then you can't save them. So the whole thing behind it is, know what you're doing, read up on it. Even if you just read up on it, but try to get certified is the best avenue on that.
Great. Well, thank you. Great piece of advice. If somebody wants to reach out to the Sandy Springs Fire Department, how would they do that?
You can contact me, Jane Laudermilk, Laudermilk, at sandyspringsga.gov. And you can also contact me on my city cell phone. It's 404-368-6490. But if you email me, you'll get a lot faster response.
And then we talked about the website earlier, but that's sandyspringsga.gov.
That's it. I'll bring you to the homepage.
And we will also, when we post the show online, we'll post a link to get there so that people can go out and actually register for 911, which I think is a fantastic idea. Lorna, anything you want to say in parting?
No, I think we've got it all covered.
Okay. Well, remind us again how to contact you and your company.
Oh, you can reach me on the web at www.armstronger.com, or you can reach me on my cell phone at 404-952-0647. And again, the website for the ready.gov is www.ready.gov. And there's a lot of additional information out there on how to prepare a kit and an emergency plan.
Great. Thank you. Boy, Lee, we got three cell phones today.
You've
got
brave
some brave people.
People.
Thank you again, James and Lorna, and thanks also to Chris in Dallas. That's it for our show today. As always, you can listen to this online at www.ugeriaradio.com. We'll be back again next week with another edition. But in the meantime, as we always close, if the children of our nation, the youth of our nation, are its greatest national resource, then it stands to reason that the seniors of our nation are its greatest national treasure. Thank you, and God bless.
Ugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.